And that's Something in the Air, Thunderclap Newman. Don't hear enough of them on the airwaves. Thunderclap Newman. Our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, has it on good authority, and he's got good sources. So listen up, all of you fans of rockets and rocket launches and so forth. There are to be two spectacular rocket launches coming next month at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Again, this is according to webmaster Greg Bishop's sources. On September the 15th, a huge Atlas V will launch the WorldView 4 Earth observation satellite, and that's supposedly to take place at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. And then on September the 19th at about 9:45 p.m., the Falcon 9 will launch 10 Iridium Next commercial communications satellites. And this is an evening launch, and it will be apparently it'll be visibly impressive, weather permitting, for hundreds of miles. So there you go, a little bonus just for listening in tonight on Coast to Coast AM, and thanks to Greg Bishop and his impeccable sources. It's kind of a cliche, I know, to say, but water, fresh, clean, potable water, is probably our scarcest resource. In the future, we'll probably, sad to say, be fighting wars over water. You could probably argue that that's happening now. Lack of access to fresh water, probably causing violence and intentions in certain parts of the world already. Two-thirds of the world's population is projected to face water scarcity by 2025. That's according to a UN report. Let that sink in. Two-thirds of the world's population is going to face water scarcity in just under 10 years' time. Here's a few other important facts about water. 68.7% of the fresh water on Earth is trapped in glaciers. 30% of fresh water is in the ground. 1.7% of the world's water is frozen and therefore unusable. Approximately 400 billion, that's with a B, gallons of water are used in the United States per day. Nearly one half the water used by Americans is used for thermoelectric power generation. One half. In 1 year, the average American residence uses over 100,000 gallons. That's both indoors and out. Water can dissolve more substances than any other liquid, including sulfuric acid. About 6,800 gallons of water is required to grow a day's food for a family of four. 780 million people lack access to an improved water source. In just one day, 200 million work hours are consumed by women collecting water for their families. One-third what the world spends on bottled water in 1 year could pay for projects providing water to everyone in need. And finally, unsafe water kills 200 children every hour. But rather than trying to find new sources of water, since in fact there's the same amount of water on Earth as there was when the Earth was formed, we can just take water we're using and build closed-loop systems to recycle it. So over the next couple of hours, with your valued input, we're going to talk about water, washing water, using advanced physics. Kevin Collier climbs aboard in mere moments. He wants to make one thing clear. Water. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, coming to you live from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Washing water. Kevin Collier is founder and CEO of Collier Group, Inc., established in 2003 to develop new technology into commercial products. Kevin works with company executive teams, boards, managers, and operational experts from all types of industries to develop new technology into easy-to-manufacture, patent-protected products. Specific areas include project management, team development, engineering design, prototype development, and testing. For 25 years, Kevin has had ownership in and operated engineering, product development, and manufacturing-related businesses with the primary focus of commercializing new and innovative technology. Organizing and managing a cohesive and efficient team is what he enjoys doing most. Experience includes corporate setup, finding capital investment, team building, product design, prototyping, testing, patenting, manufacturing, startup, and marketing. Kevin also has a solid foundation of hands-on experience as a welder, machinist, tool and die maker, mold and pattern maker, CNC programmer, tool designer, and manufacturing engineer. Kevin Collier, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Why the obsession? It's a passion. I don't know if I'll say obsession, but why the passion for H2O, Kevin?
It's just so important in our lives, and it is the universal solvent. And there's tremendous pollution problems about us every day. It's most interesting to me that just over the last two decades, we've become energy independent in the U.S. But it came with a cost, and that cost is billions and billions of barrels of toxic, hazardous water that comes out of the oil-bearing rock. And my focus has been to be able to recycle the worst of the worst industrial wastewaters back into reusable water.
And you, in addition to, you know, obviously wanting to make water potable, you've also worked in the oil industry because, you know, obviously oil and water, you know, it's the old saying, oil and water don't mix. But you found a way to separate oil and water in new innovative ways, correct?
Yes. You know, oil and water, we call it free oil. Is immiscible, which means it doesn't want to mix with water. It has a lighter specific gravity. It's not as heavy as water. So it floats on top of water like a boat. Sometimes the oil droplets in wastewater are extremely small, down in the even submicron size. And it takes can take days and days and days for that natural separation to occur. And starting about 25 years ago, we looked at increasing the G-force. I mean, right now we're experiencing one G-force, one gravity force on our bodies. But if you put this oil-water mixture into a centrifuge and you spin it up fast enough, you can increase that G-force up to 1,000 or several thousand times. And what that means is that the separation process takes place 1,000 times faster, or you can remove oil droplets that are 1,000 times smaller. And so the centrifuge processes are especially applicable in offshore operations because they're very small and very efficient, and space is a premium on offshore platforms. Or when you have oil that the density is very close to the density of water and it doesn't want to readily separate at 1G, when you spin it up in a centrifuge, the difference in density is magnified many times, and the efficiency is extremely high. So the centrifuge is just one of the tools that we've developed for treating the water.
And we're talking 1,000 Gs here with these centrifuges. And what was your inspiration, working on jet engines?
Yes, I started my career out of college with a manufacturing engineering degree, and worked on design, processing, tooling, and building jet engines, which dealt with dynamic balancing, close tolerances, high-speed bearings. And so that gave me a background to design and develop centrifuges. It's actually progressed to the point where we have a centrifuge now that's pressurized, which means the wastewater comes into the centrifuge under pressure, and there's five distinct outlets from the centrifuge. One carries a solid slurry. One carries clean water. One carries clean oil. One lets any entrained gas out. And sometimes we get an interesting small combination of oil, water, and solids that forms a stable emulsion, and we bring that out separately. And all this takes place in a very small machine, very high speed, state-of-the-art separator, centrifuge.
Now, there are a number of steps, though, because you can't, I don't know, you tell me, but you can't remove all the impurities using a centrifuge. There's various steps in this, you know, washing of water. So what are some of the other steps?
That's correct. We have a toolbox, and depending on what the pollutants are in the water depends on which tools that we use. There can be what we call free oil, which we've just been discussing, which wants to separate from water. There is suspended solids, very fine particulate that actually have an attraction for the water molecule. We can have dissolved components in the water, the worst being heavy metals, mercury, zinc, hexavalent chromium, other nasty things like that. We also have dissolved organics, benzene, toluene. These are carcinogenic. These are very nasty pollutants. And then we have the salts, the mag chloride, sodium chloride, potassium chloride. And over the last 25 years, what I noticed was that all of these pollutants, and there can be hundreds, could be categorized into five categories. The free oils, suspended solids, dissolved metals, dissolved organics, and salts. And so we went on a path of finding out what the most efficient processes and equipment were for each of those five steps. And this resulted in 2014, we produced a mobile water treatment system that could actually follow the fracking crews in the oil field, and we could treat the flowback water. It takes about 3 to 6 million gallons to fracture a well, and then over the first few months of the well, that water comes out with the oil, and then additional groundwater continues to come out with the oil. But we developed a full-scale system that could follow these fracking crews through the oil field and reclaim and clean this water. Traditionally, they were trucking this water great distances, 50, 100 miles. The trucking cost is the single most expensive thing for the oil companies. And then the majority of this water gets re-injected back down into the ground, which you mentioned can cause tremors.
How does that work, Kevin? This water is like a brine water, tremendous saline or salt content.
It's very heavy. But what they do is they'll use an old oil well, or they'll drill a new well down into a permeable zone. And the problem is that they're injecting that produced water back into the ground at upwards of 1,000 PSI. And when you've got tens of thousands of injection wells, some of them in very concentrated areas, the USGS has absolutely proven that this high pressure injection has destabilized the rock strata and causes earthquakes, particularly in Oklahoma.
And have they banned fracking, or they've just banned pumping the water back into the ground?
They have passed some legislation limiting the amount of produced water that's injected back into the ground.
So you get back into the trucking it to an off-site facility. And I think you mentioned to me when we met in Salt Lake City, all of this increased, there's another hazard here, and that is all of this increased truck traffic on the roads is causing mayhem.
You know, in most places where they're actively fracking, the fatalities due to these produced water hauling trucks has nearly doubled, according to several reports that we have, which is a serious problem for communities.
Absolutely. Now, when you pump this backwater back into the ground, and what did you say was it? How many PSI?
Well, as they start to inject that into the ground, the zone becomes plugged with paraffins and asphaltanes and particulate, and so they have to keep upping and upping and upping the pressure. And I've been to dozens and dozens of these saltwater injection sites, and they can be injecting at 1,000 PSI or higher. And that's extremely high pressure.
Now, this point is debatable, I guess, and it's kind of a contentious thing. But the idea that this backwater can also contaminate the groundwater, these natural aquifers from which, you know, many communities draw their drinking water. I mean, is that a concern?
It is a concern. They have very good ways of cementing casings and other things. There have been breaches, and certainly there is a potential there for a breach into an aquifer.
So the idea is, Kevin, that this all can be avoided. There's no need to pump it back into the ground and contaminate the groundwater and cause earthquakes, because you can treat the water. And a little bit later in the program, we'll talk about another plan that you have to use this backwater with its salt content to provide green energy, electricity to thousands of homes. But if you treat the water, then what can you do with it? Can it be used for agriculture, for example, irrigation?
The majority of it can be. So we can take this flowback in produced water, run it through the five steps, and if the salt content is not too high, we can get 50 to 60% of that water to what we call a dischargeable level, where it can go back into the environment. It can be used for agriculture. Technically, it would meet the requirements for potable water, but it's not actually used for drinking water.
You could get, using your five...
You can recharge the aquifer. You could water crops, so forth.
Using your five-step process, you could turn the backflow from fracking into drinkable water?
Yes.
That's remarkable. What is what do you mean by a closed loop recycle system?
Well, here in the West, there's a shortage of water, and so all of the water that we treat would go back to the oil companies normally. And it would be used over and over again for the fracking process. We checked with the water engineer in the state of Wyoming, and in southeast Wyoming, 70% of the available agricultural or ranching water was being used for fracking. Of course, fracking is off about 40% right now.
All right, Kevin, I've got to jump in here. We're going to take a timeout. Raphael Sadiq, Love That Girl, taking us into the break. Back with more of my conversation with Kevin Collier from the Collier Group on washing water right here on Coast to Coast AM. Otis, what need be said further than that? Otis. Webmaster Greg Bishop posted this story in the news section at Coast to Coast AM. It's an amazing story. When the United States and the Soviet Union were in the height of the Cold War, a solar storm could have been mistaken for an incoming attack, according to new research. A solar storm on May 23, 1967, jammed U.S. polar surveillance radars, which the Air Force took as a sign of an incoming attack. However, space weather forecasters conveyed news of the storm and its potential to wreak havoc with communications just in time. Today, it's better known that solar storms can cause electromagnetic disturbances that jam radio communications and power lines. This is a grave situation, lead author Dolores Knipp, a space physicist at the University of Colorado in Boulder, said in a statement of the 1967 situation. But here's where the story turns. Things were going horribly wrong, and then something goes commendably right. So, we almost had potentially a nuclear war between the United States and the Soviet Union back in 1967, were it not for the saving graces of space weather forecasters. So the next time the weatherman or the weather girl botches the five-day weather forecast, just step back and thank them for avoiding nuclear war back in 1967. Hey, have you signed up to be a Coast Insider yet? It's a great way to listen to the show live or in demand with your computer or mobile device. All audio streams are delivered in high quality, crystal clear audio. As well, Coast Insider benefits include you can listen to the last 5 years of audio archives on the website at coasttocoastam.com, audio streaming or downloadable MP3s of the show archives, media access through websites or mobile apps. You can chat with George Norrie and other special guests, iTunes podcast, a direct email to George Norrie. All this, get this, 15 cents a day. Want to become a member of the Coast Insider Club? It's real simple. Just log on to coasttocoastam.com. Back with more of my conversation with inventor, innovator, Kevin Collier as we discuss washing water right here on Coast to Coast AM. I want to thank listener Jeff for calling in and reminding me that it is the 13th anniversary of the Great Blackout of 2003. I remember here in Toronto, the moment that happened, I was listening to this radio station, talk radio, AM 640, driving north on the Don Valley Parkway, and the 404 just got to Woodbine Avenue, and the radio went out, and that was the beginning of a very interesting, what was it, 48 hours, maybe 72 hours without power, and that was it's kind of interesting because we actually kind of reveled in it for a while before the novelty wore off. I remember playing Yahtzee by candlelight, and my kids thought that was the greatest thing. It was kind of romantic for a short spell. Back to our conversation with Kevin Collier, inventor, and we're talking about washing water. Now, someone asked wanted me to ask you: are you state certified in water treatment, Kevin?
No, we do not do municipal water. We just service the oil and gas industry at this point.
All right. Now, one of the interesting, one of the great polluters in many respects are these huge container ships, because they're using, it's kind of the dregs from a barrel of oil. I mean, it's just one step above asphalt, practically, that they're burning. But they also produce a lot of this this bilge water, which is kind of a mixture of seawater, and it's got diesel in there and some antifreeze and oil and a lot of other stuff that accumulates in the bowels of these huge ships.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And they used to just dump this, and some of them still do, I guess. They just dump it overboard, right?
They used to. They're really cracking down on that. But they used to dump their ballast out in the international waters before they came into the national waters. But most of them are pretty responsible now. They offload their ballast and bilge water when they get into port.
But then what to do with it? And you've got a and you have a system of dealing with that as well.
The same system would treat
right.
that without any trouble at all. One of the things that we achieved is that a lot of the wastewater treatment systems out there can clean the water, but they combine all of the contaminants into a nasty waste that can cost even more to dispose of. We've been very careful to segregate the waste. We can take all of the oil out clean it and make it pipeline grade oil. We oxidize the dissolved organics. They convert into CO2 and they're gone. Very little CO2 is created. And the solids and toxic metals that are combined to make insoluble compounds are all turned into a dripless cake and can go to a landfill. Most states have a regulated landfill that can take those wastes. And so we're very careful to segregate those wastes and to not create a chemical soup that's an even larger problem to deal with.
I'm not sure how much detail you can go into with this particular system of treating water, because obviously it's proprietary, but and that's the use of magnets for taking impurities out of the water.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
This is a recent project that we've done. When we pass the water past alternating very strong magnetic fields, what it does is it reduces the surface tension. You mentioned that water is the universal solvent. That's due in large part to the fact that water molecules like to cluster. Most water molecule clusters are 16 to 18 molecules. Trapped inside that cluster are these impurities. When we disturb the water molecule, we're actually messing with the spin of the hydrogen atoms on the water molecule. The clusters break down. They can no longer hold all of those contaminants, and it enhances filtration and separation. I think this is going to be very important in the future in water treatment. Magnetic water treatment is what we call that.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
It basically just enhances all of the other separation processes.
Right. Now, and this is for some reason, and you can explain why, this concept is somewhat controversial, the idea that you can use magnets to purify water. Why is it so contentious?
Well, when this came out several decades ago, it actually goes quite a ways back, they thought it was a water softener, but it doesn't actually remove any of the hardness from the water. But we have absolute proof that it reduces the surface tension of the water, and that facilitates all of the other separation processes. So we do magnetic water conditioning on the front end. It makes our oil-water separation, our reverse osmosis, ultrafiltration, and all of those work much more efficiently because we're dealing with small clusters or single water molecules instead of large clusters.
So what you're really doing, as you mentioned, and just to repeat, you're altering the surface tension of the water, which makes it more difficult to hold on to these impurities, because it has something to do with, I guess, is it the hydrogen atom that wants to grab onto something, and that's to hold on to these impurities?
Well, the theory is that you've got the two hydrogens on the oxygen, and they're spinning, and they're either spinning in the same direction or the opposite direction. And when you pass it through those intense alternating magnetic fields, it can stop the spin, and they can start up in the opposite direction or whatever, and that's when the clusters come apart, is the theory behind it.
Now, I kicked myself because I was down in Salt Lake City to see you, and I didn't ask to see this, but and again, not sure if you can talk about it, but you have created, I guess you just, I don't know, you may have even machined it yourself, but it's just something that you attach to your garden hose, and again, by reducing the surface tension of the water, it's having a remarkable effect. I mean, you use it in your vegetable garden. Tell me about that.
I do. I build a small 5 gallon per minute magnetic water treatment conditioner, and I have it on the hose. that I use to water my garden. I love to grow vegetables. And it's very interesting because without the device, I can run water to the end of the row and then it slowly soaks outward. When I put this device on and I start the water at the beginning of the row, it just soaks the whole garden radially. It just soaks straight out through the soil because it's single or small clusters instead of large clusters. It percolates much more readily through the soil, hydrates the plants. The plants can actually uptake the water much easier in a smaller cluster or a single molecule. But we've had a tremendous vegetable garden this year.
And I mean, what else is it doing? Because you mentioned you're digging up potatoes much earlier. You're harvesting much earlier. And these potatoes are what, the size of grapefruits or something?
Baseball size. We started harvesting baseball sized potatoes the 1st of July. Normally, we don't get those till later in almost the middle of August.
So what else is happening then with this water? It's just, it's not just that the plant is getting more water. I mean, is it somehow affecting the nutrients in the water or in the soil, or what else is going on, do you know?
Well, the plants are just more hydrated, so they grow faster when they're better hydrated.
How do I get me one of those things? I mean, have you thought about marketing this? This would be a boon to backyard gardeners and farmers. Never mind just backyard gardeners, farmers.
These are already being used by avocado and artichoke growers in California. Similar devices are being used to water golf courses. So it's on the internet. I think the new thing is the water conditioning to facilitate all of the other separation and purification processes in industrial wastewater treatment. That's the new application.
Now, you work with David Yerth, who's been on this program, the inventor of this carbon dioxide device that can eliminate all these pollutants that come out of a tailpipe in an internal combustion engine. And now he was telling me something very interesting, and shows you how much I know about water, something we take for granted, but we really don't understand what water is. And that is that if you take all of the impurities out of water, it ceases to be water. Does that make sense to you?
Absolute pure water is very interesting. It will dissolve oil. It actually will not even support life because it'll absorb all the calcium and all the minerals in an organism, and it will die. So ultra-pure water is very interesting.
To say the least, it will dissolve oil?
Yes, there's a company that has a patent. They have ultra-pure water, and they're using it in high-pressure sprayers to clean oil tanks. Extremely clean. It just dissolves right into the ultra pure water.
Is it corrosive?
In that it will dissolve your bones and
that's corrosive.
Minerals, I guess that's corrosive.
But not at the same time, not necessarily toxic, or is it?
No.
I mean, then we need to be looking. I mean, think about the applications just as a household cleaner.
Yes, it poses some very interesting applications.
So when you take all the impurities out of the water, it becomes, I would think, very volatile. Does that have something to do with the covalent bonding with the hydrogen atoms, or what's going on there?
Well, that's where David's the expert. We enjoy working together. He's the physicist. We love working together. He understands things at the atomic level, and Collier Group takes those ideas, and we try and commercialize them into products. The ultra-pure water is not actually something that Collier Group is working on, but other companies are, and the applications are very, very interesting.
So again, you could take using these different processes, including the magnets, for example, treating, affecting the surface tension of the water to release these impurities. You could take diesel fuel, antifreeze, oil. How about heavy metals? Can you get rid of heavy metals?
Yes, we use a process called electrocoagulation. We use a direct current to charge a cathode and an anode, and the anode is sacrificial, and it launches highly positively charged aluminum ions into the water. And along with the direct electrical current, it disrupts the colloidal attraction that heavy metals have for the water molecule. And the heavy metals will come out of solution and form compounds with the metal ions, and we actually create insoluble metal hydroxides, which can be settled or filtered out of the water. That's one of the five steps in our process.
How about desalination? Obviously, I'm trying to remember the figure. Is it something like 97% of the water on the earth is salt water, so you can't drink it. But where are we in terms of desalination?
Well, we're using osmotic membranes in the reverse osmosis filtration process. And so the most important thing is to get all of the free oil, all the heavy metals, all the suspended solids, and all of the dissolved organics out of the water, so that all you've got is your salt ions and water by the time you get to reverse osmosis. And it's interesting that the magnetic water treatment can reduce the pressure, the osmotic pressure that it takes to push the water through the reverse osmosis membrane, because you're not breaking apart large clusters. You're breaking apart small clusters or pushing single molecules through the membrane. But so normally you would get 50%, 60% of the water to pass through the reverse osmosis membrane. Pretty much only a pure water molecule can go through the membrane, and so all the contaminants are rejected. The salts are concentrated in a reject. So that's usually the final process. That's what gives you your dischargeable or potable water, is going through a reverse osmosis membrane.
I would think, Kevin, because this is your passion, water, and wanting, to provide clean water for various uses, but I would think that it would be very high on your sort of bucket list to be able to go over to some of these developing nations that don't have access to clean water and put some of this technology to work. We're coming up on a break, and we'll start the conversation now just briefly, and we'll carry it over. But where are you in terms of bringing this technology, or helping to bring this technology to the developing world?
Well, we want to first solve the produced water and flowback water here in the U.S. so that we stop using municipal water and then throwing it away, pumping it back down in the ground. When this water, the most economical thing we can do is recycle this water over and over again. That's our focus right now.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk to you about this process of taking this backflow water from the fracking industry and turning it into green electricity. I mean, this is incredible. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines and take questions and comments. Washing Water with Kevin Collier. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay a while.